Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, January 22nd, a day of celebration on Wall Street, perhaps. Hello again, I'm Orion Samuelson, joined today by Max Armstrong, who is back from New Zealand, and a couple of guests, Darcy Vedder, who is the chief negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, and we'll be talking markets with Jerry Goodell of Rice Dairy in Chicago. But they may be celebrating around Wall Street this evening, because for the first time in 2016, we have actually moved higher for the week. At the end of the trading session today, the Dow for the week was up 0.7%. The S&P 500 up 1.4%. And the NASDAQ gained 2.3%. The first positive week of the new year, and I guess a reason for celebration. And you can't mention China as being a factor in the market today. Actually, the market was probably helped by the cold weather, the cold snap in North America and the cold snap in Europe that suddenly turned the oil market around. And oil moved 10% higher today. A lot of bears in the market that had gone short came rushing back into the market to cover the shorts, and that brought a lot of buying to the point where we went up 10%, one of the biggest daily rallies ever. The onset of a massive snowstorm on the East Coast sent U.S. heating oil up more than 10%, helping fuel a 15% gain in crude prices over 2 days. And that reversed nearly half of the fund-driven sell-off that had pushed crude below $30 a barrel for the first time in 12 years. Phil Flynn, who covers that oil market, said, "I think panic took over common sense, and now we're starting to get a grip on reality." That, according to Phil Flynn, covering the oil market. So let's take a look at where we ended the day on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial Average will start the week Monday at 16,093 after a 210-point gain today. The S&P 500 will start trading next week at 1906 after gaining 38 points today. The NASDAQ Composite will start the week at 4,590. After gaining 119 points. And the worry factor finally took a pretty heavy drop. The VIX at the CBOE, that's the volatility index, we call it the degree of worrying on the part of investors, it went down 4.33 points today and will start the week at 22.34. But let's take a look at some of the action on Wall Street today. A 4.3% jump in the S&P energy sector laid the foundation for the S&P 500 strongest session so far this year. After dropping earlier this week to lows not seen since 2014, the S&P 500 has recovered in the past two sessions to end the week higher. But for the year and the early going, the S&P 500 is still down 7% in 2016. The U.S. economic data today showed existing home sales jumped nearly 15% in December. That beat estimates, and it recovered from a 10.5% decline in November, but that drop in November came because of some changes in mortgage rules that impacted the market. Now, today we saw Apple up 5.33%, giving the biggest boost to the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. Despite widespread concerns about potentially weak iPhone demand, Piper Jaffray recommended buying Apple shares heading into its quarterly results next week. Fourth quarter earnings reports likely to offer not a lot of cheer, with S&P 500 companies on average average expected to post a 4.33% drop in profit. Shares of General Electric dropped 1.25% after its quarterly revenue missed analyst estimates. American Express today dropped 12% after its disappointing earnings forecast. Schlumberger rose 6.10%. That was sort of a surprise. The world's biggest oil field services company reported better than expected profit and set a $10 billion buyback program. That housing report that we got this morning was certainly helpful to the market. We'll get more of the housing industry health reports next week as we really move heavily into the earnings report season. Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, Facebook all reporting next week, and Apple reporting. And then let's take a look at some of the other companies that will be reporting earnings next week. AT&T, the number two U.S. wireless carrier and the world's largest pay TV operator, will report. Time Warner Cable, Eli Lilly and Company, Boeing, Ford Motor Company, the maker of Cessna airplanes, Textron will be recording. Visa will be reporting next week, as will AbbVie, and Colgate-Palmolive will be reporting. MasterCard also on the report schedule for earnings next week, so earnings will probably dominate what goes on in the marketplace on Wall Street next week. Recently at the Farm Bureau Convention, I had the opportunity to talk trade with a young lady from Nebraska who is the chief agricultural negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative Office in Washington, D.C. She has been working overtime on the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, and it's been going for quite some time, of course, and finally now we have agreement by the individual nations, but it has to be ratified. I asked Darcy Vetter if she thinks that the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement will make it this time.
Well, I certainly hope so. We completed negotiations with the 11 other countries who are at the table in the Trans-Pacific Partnership in October of this year. We have now released the full text of that agreement to the public, so everyone in the United States can take a look on the USTR website, or for those interested in agriculture, the Foreign Agricultural Service has put out a great deal of information about all of the benefits. So we're at a time now where we're helping folks evaluate what the TPP will mean for U.S. agriculture and for the rest of the U.S. economy. And we're working closely with Congress to see how this agreement can be considered by them and hopefully passed into law very soon.
And to clarify, it will be an up or down vote on the part of Congress?
That's right. Congress recently passed Trade Promotion Authority, which creates a system where they consider the agreement itself on an up or down vote. And in exchange for their willingness to give us that up or down vote and not amend the agreement at the end, we commit to a series of consultations with Congress throughout the negotiation. And we commit to meeting a series of high standard negotiating objectives with our trading partners. And so throughout the negotiation of the TPP, we were sitting down with members of Congress and their staff to let them know how they were proceeding, to take their advice, to achieve the result that we did.
The other countries have to go through the same process, I take it. How do you feel about they're adopting and accepting?
Well, frankly, we think pretty good. Other countries have their own procedures that they have to follow. A number of them, unlike the United States, have a parliamentary system where they, you know, vote on these agreements. But of course, their leadership is a member of that majority party in their Congress. So we've seen some very positive statements coming out of trading partners, you know, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, others. And we think that there's a very good chance that all of those countries will be able to pass this into law.
So what's the biggest challenge you have now beyond the Trans-Pacific?
Well, again, I think that one of the biggest problems is just telling the story. This is a 6,000-page agreement. It's written in tradeese, which is not always English, so people can't always clearly understand the benefits when they read the text itself. And so part of the reason I'm here at the Farm Bureau Convention and that my colleagues are at similar events throughout the country is to make sure that people really understand how this will tangibly benefit their lives. Agricultural trade accounts for about 20% of U.S. farm income. And as our production continues to increase, that production has to go somewhere. So maintaining and expanding markets for U.S. agriculture is critical to our success. And so that's really what I'm here to demonstrate, is that the other TPP countries have agreed to eliminate or significantly reduce their tariffs on products, to live up to high standards that make sure they treat our products fairly at the border. And all of that translates into more money in farmers' pockets.
I have to toss this out to you for your reaction. Once a year for the past 10, 12 years in Chicago, I get a letter from a lady complaining bitterly about the fact that we export agricultural products because, quote, if we kept them here at home, my grocery bill would be a lot smaller.
Well, it might be, but of course, you have to have farmers in order to be able to fill that grocery basket, and we need those farmers to be able to support their families. And I think it's important to remember that not only is the United States the biggest agricultural exporter, we're the biggest importer, too. And she can fill her grocery basket with strawberries in January and, you know, tropical fruits the year round, in part because we have a robust system of agricultural trade, which allows us to sell products in the places they are needed most, and allows us to purchase what we want most at the time of the year that we want it.
Darcy Vedder, the Chief Agricultural Negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative Office in Washington, D.C. Coming up, Max sits down with Jerry Goodell to talk markets when we continue on the markets brought to you by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
In the studio with us this weekend, Jerry Goodell from Rice Dairy to take a look at this whole commodity picture. First, you can't ignore crude, can you? And what's happening in commodities in general, moving down along with crude oil? This has been a precipitous drop that we've seen here. How does it affect the grains?
Well, it is pretty hard to ignore, because basically every time we wake up in the morning, there's a weakness around the world for macroeconomics, and then the crude oil prices being on the defensive here because of Iran coming on board here after the settlement of the nuclear reactors and that. Interestingly enough, though, the reaction in the grain side of the markets since the last grain report here, when it started to show a little bit less supplies out here and we thought we had, starting to try to stabilize a little bit, but it's been a tough go here since late in the fall and on into the year. We've really been on a defensive posture here with expectations of a big crop around the world. We'll see how South America ultimately turns out. They've had kind of a dry December, but things have improved down there.
With corn ethanol and with soy oil being so closely associated with the energy markets, have we seen any impact yet from that crude oil drop, as you might expect with those commodities because of the corollary of the demand there in the energy sector?
Well, there has been a lot of expectations of a reaction, but the actual production levels of ethanol have stayed very strong. And in reality here, if you looked at that, we probably should have a little higher corn demand. But part of this has been sucked up by excess sorghum supplies that are out there in the plains that are now going some of the, through those plants. So we're getting kind of a and interestingly enough, that particular product from sorghum turns out to be classified as a positive, and that's ethanol plus type of thing where it's similar to sugar ethanol. And so it's going into places like California and the West Coast that want that type of ethanol.
But now, some of the private weather forecasters, and I think even the government forecast, is indicating we're going to have warmer than normal temperatures through the rest of this month and into February. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that also suggest perhaps additional weakness in the energy market?
To some extent, the old game of what wintertime driving is not as great as it should be. Maybe it's slightly warmer will be helpful. Right now, the nor'easter, though, is planned to come into this north, into the East Coast this weekend. It's going to shut down things. So it's been kind of a come see, come saw situation on our weather scenarios and its impact on energy. Interestingly enough, it has taken the overall value of crude down. I was surprised by the value I saw coming into today's.
It was amazing. Lowest in 13 years.
Startling prices for the suburbs of Chicago when I drove out or came to the studio today.
We got some news the other day about wheat coming into the United States from Argentina. And apparently this is a development already on the heels of the presidential election down there, that feed quality wheat will be coming into Wilmington, North Carolina, going into the hog industry in that big hog-producing state. What do you make of that?
Well, Wilmington and the Wilmington Purchasing Group have always been an interesting they love to kick sand in the Midwestern grain farmers' face. Many times they have lots of publicity about purchasing things from various parts of the world, but never really showing up when it gets to the U.S. It seems to divert it along the way. I can't guarantee that that's going to happen with this. Definitely the Argentine situation, they changed the whole structure down there with changing the quotas out and taking the taxes off. So they're going to be a lot more competitive in the world. The interesting thing about it is a lot of their wheat, particularly in the crop that's now growing, has got very low protein levels. So surprisingly, there's some commentary that people expect Brazil to take advantage of that because that's their normal trading partner. But in this case, they might have to also come to the U.S. to get some higher protein to be able to blend because of the fact that they're talking about 10% or less because of the wet weather has drained the protein levels of this year's wheat crop in Argentina.
One other interesting comment as we're talking about South America was that there could be so much port congestion in Brazil. Now, I know they've expanded their port capacity, but as the soy export program comes on here not too many weeks from now, that they might not be able to ship corn that they had already booked, that some of that business might come to the United States. What's your assessment of that?
I definitely think that's a possibility. I think even the standpoint of the Brazilians always seem to have issues logistically. Last year maybe it was better than they've had in a while. They have opened up some northern ports in here, and they're moving it through the Amazon and things like that. But on an overall basis, they're still dependent so much on Santos and Paraguay. And Santos just recently had a port fire and issues down there and something. It wasn't specifically directed towards the agricultural side, but it's caused issues. And at this point, I've heard some issues about some early sales purchases and shipments from Brazil being slowed down because we did have that delay of getting things planted.
It seems like every week when the weekly report comes out, that corn position, that huge position held by the shorts, the managed funds, just really stands out and gets your attention. It's so heavily short. Are we not poised for some kind of a bounce back here?
Well, I think that's definitely we got firepower for a setback. We're going to have to need some kind of I'm not sure it has to be a huge factor here on the production scare around the world. We're starting to build something of some significance in Africa, South Africa, and both in Tanzania. I think both have had issues, and the USDA cut 4 million out of their crop down to 8 million, which is the smallest crop they've had in decades.
El Nino effect dryness.
Exactly. Then South Africa and that. And we've had the dryness in northern Brazil. It definitely got, over the last couple of weeks, have improved a lot. Boy, you definitely, Goiás and Biafra have improved. Mato Grosso is just kind of limping along. It'll be interesting is to see what does come out of some of the early yields in Brazil on their beans. And at this point, they've had some excellent crops down there in their Safrina corn. Can we get 3 years in a row and great crops? We'll see.
Let's look at some numbers you've put together here on corn supply, demand, taking a look at the plantings this year and anticipated yields. If you look at these charts, you look on out in the extended picture, and it doesn't look so bearish after all.
No, I think the interesting twist is that people get kind of mired down in the outside short-term influences. If you look at what's going on in the basic demand of corn, at this kind of price level, we should see some bubbling up of feed demand. I think we've seen it in the chicken side, and even the pork side is going to be solid. I don't see there's going to be any disease issues popping up there like we've had in the past. We had a little bit of this avian flu pop up in Indiana, but I think that's going to be a lot better controlled than the thing that happened in Iowa last fall.
It's a different strain also, is it?
Exactly. And it kind of built out of some other more local situations. So we'll see from there. But overall, it doesn't look like it's going to be the kind of terror factor we had last fall and last summer, I should say, from there. And you put together, I just used a 1.8% kind of increase, which is about a 175, 200 million increase. That's a combination of bounce back of 100 million in exports, about 125 million in feed, and a little bit up in ethanol. And those are not outrageous numbers, considering the price levels we're at right now. And all of a sudden, a 168 number just kind of keeps us together. A 165 number on yield gives us back down towards a 1.25, 1.3, which is under 10%, around 10% on a stocks-to-use ratio, which is a pretty tight situation. If you think about the demand structure here of, say, just a quick feed number of 13 billion, that becomes the 1.3 carryover stock. And, you know, the old adage was a billion bushels, but that was back when we had 9 and 10 billion demand. When we're at 13, we still need a certain amount of demand going through this. So I think there's at least the combination of these numbers, a little scare, put together this big short position in that. I think there's going to be a bounce back sometime between now and 1st of April in these prices. I'm not sure how quick this is going to be because we still got to go through some USDA numbers coming out for the, you know, the forum numbers and things like that in February. But in general, hopefully we stop concentrating on the energy market as our only lead on the grain markets and we start looking at our own fundamentals and start thinking about where that might be for 2016.
You think there's a good possibility that will start to happen, that we'll see a swing, what, probably after the Ag Outlook Conference?
I think that's where it traditionally starts to pick up. That's a real normal seasonal low. You know, it's time for the spring rents. It's time for the loan value. We have a certain amount of certain things that we have to get through, but I think at that point, then we're really going to be concentrating on how many acres we're going to plant. Now, I know the 3 million acres that we just didn't plant a wheat's got everybody talking about is planting corn all over the place, but a lot of those acres in Texas and Oklahoma and western Kansas are really not going to be acres that's going to go into corn. Now, they might sneak a little bit of it into Milo, but in reality of it here, there could be a lot of other things that they just might go following some of that because these kind of prices are not worth putting marginal land into production.
When the prices do bump up a little bit, as we've seen in the past few days, farmer selling picks up, just as you guys have advised farmers, hey, sell a rally. But we're still extremely undersold, are we not?
Oh, yeah. Well, percentage of our sold for the year is still somewhat, I'd say it's anywhere from 10 to 15% behind the more seasonal values than that. And to some extent, if producers have good storage and things like that, and they're looking for some income here to keep them tidied over and that, I've even told some people to consider the loan at a $2 corn and $3.50 corn. That's still over half of the value, and they're only charging you less than 0.5% for interest. That's might be a way of looking at some income.
Shrewd marketers may still do very well. In fact, I heard of some producers who had some excellent excellent results from their marketings and their overall balance sheet in 2015.
Right, right. I think the people that started a couple of years ago and looked at some of those longer-term values and went ahead and put out 15 to 30% of that and then started looking at last summer some of the rallies we had, they're still hanging in there. There's been some concern about loan issues and stuff like that, but I have not heard, and I've done some checking around in the last week or 10 days here about possible horror stories and things like that, but I'm not picking it up from the banking industry right now.
Jerry Goodell, Rice Dairy, thank you.
Thank you, Rex.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Segment three comes after this count. 3, 2, 1. The meeting agenda for agriculture, farmers, and ranchers is beginning to heat up now because the Northern Pulse Growers are holding their annual meeting in Minot, North Dakota on Monday. And I'm going to head north to Minot to appear on that program at the banquet on Monday night. And then on Wednesday, it's off to San Diego and the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Around 6,000 or 7,000 cattlemen and cattlewomen will show up at that event. A lot of interesting topics on the program, and of course all the hallway conversations and at dinner or whatever, the talk will be on the roller coaster ride of the cattle market during the past several months. But at least we are ending the week ahead of their convention with a pretty good move in the cattle market, because today the cattle market ended sharply higher after an up limit move earlier in the week. Today the April live cattle contract went up $2.67 a hundredweight. That means it'll start trade on Monday at $133.85. And the April feeder cattle contract gained $4.70 today. That means it'll start the week at $159.15 a hundredweight. Hog futures, though, weren't that good today. Lean hogs pressured by profit-taking and futures premiums to the exchange's hog index for January 20th. Upward-trending cash prices and the morning's firm wholesale pork values, however, limited losses in the hog futures market. At the end of the day, they had lost 60 cents in the February contract. That means hog futures will start Monday at $63.15 a hundredweight. And then the grain market, and that's in a situation now where there's not much news happening. We're getting the various figures on what kind of acreage changes we'll see for this crop year, but not full agreement there, other than they think we'll plant a few more acres of corn and maybe not so many acres of the soybean contract. The wheat picture, which was the surprise, you'll recall, in last week's final production report and planting intentions for this year, there are 3 million wheat acres that are not going to be planted, and there's still discussion on where they might be planted. But let's see where we start the activity on Monday. After gaining 0.75 cents today, March wheat will start the week at $4.75 a bushel. March corn, after gaining 3 cents today, starts the week at $3.70 1/4, and new crop December corn, after gaining 2.5 cents today, will start the trade on Monday at $3.92 a bushel. The soybean market moved lower today. Again, supply is a factor. The March soybean contract dropped 2.5 cents, so beans will start the week at 876.5 on Monday. And new crop November soybeans dropped 4 cents today. So we'll see an $8.83¾ start in the November bean contract come Monday. Now, some other events on the calendar as we move into February. The National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress, the 60th such event, will be held in Cincinnati, and that'll start the middle of November, the same week as the National Farm Machinery Show gets underway in Louisville, and the World Ag Expo gets underway in Tulare, California. And Max Armstrong will be heading for the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky. Another event on the calendar in mid-February is the Annual Outlook Forum conducted by the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. And a lot of people look forward to the information that comes from that event because it could have an impact on the prices in the future. So we'll probably run into a lot of you at these various meetings. We look forward to it. But for now, thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.